Krishna. Unto Lord Sri Krishna. Cha. Also. Tat. Of him. Prabhavagyaha. The knower of the glories. Bhishma. Asinam. Sitting. Jagat Ishwaram. The Lord of the universe. Hridistam. Situated in the heart. Pujayam Asa. Worshipped. Mayaya. By internal potency. Upatta. Manifested. Vigraham. A form. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Lord Sri Krishna is situated in everyone's heart. Yet He manifests His transcendental form by His internal potency. This very Lord was sitting before Bhishmadev, and since Bhishmadev knew of His glories, he worshipped Him duly. Purport. The Lord's omnipotency is displayed by His simultaneous presence in every place. He is present always in His eternal abode, Goloka Vrindavana. And still He is present in everyone's heart, and even within every indivisible atom. I'm sorry, it's invisible atom. When He manifests His eternal transcendental form in the material world, He does so by His internal potency. The external potency or the material energy has nothing to do with His eternal form. All these truths were known to Sri Bhishmadeva, who worshipped Him accordingly. Om Agyana Tiviranda Syagana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militabhyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Bhishmadeva recognized Krishna, even though he's familiar with Krishna as a family member, as a friend, but he's not at all ignorant of who Krishna really is. He is tattvajna. Bhishmadeva is an exceptional person. He's not only a knower of the confidential absolute truth, but he's a great speaker and an authority on the absolute truth. He's one of the 12 Mahajans, one of the standard authorities on devotional service. This doesn't mean that they're the only people who know Krishna as the absolute truth, but they're the ones who are especially empowered to teach others. There are many teachers, but they're the teachers of the teachers. We also read in the previous chapter of the devotion of Uttara and of Kunti. And Kunti offered her prayers, which were very wonderful prayers. But she's not a teacher, not a considered a learned brahmana, sage. She's a simple woman. But she's also tattvajna. Being an actual knower of the confidential truth of the personality of Godhead doesn't depend on book learning. You may not be a prominent speaker, but you still may be a confidential devotee of the Lord by virtue of your tattva-jnana. Anye tvaiva majananta śrutvānyebhya upāsate tepi chatitarantyeva mityum śrutiparāyana. There are those who worship the Lord in Jnana Yoga.
They have studied the Vedanta Sutra. They know the whole science, or rather the philosophy, of the relationship between the Supreme Lord and all his different energies. They know all this very properly, and they may be empowered to explain these delicate matters to other people. But there are others who are not learned, who are not empowered preachers, but they're still perfect devotees and have an intimate relationship with Krishna. Anye, there are others who don't have the intellect to study from books, but they simply hear from those who have read the books, who have rather understood the books. Those who are learned can explain to those who are not. And simple people, even women, shudras, uneducated members of higher class families, and even sinful people, shudvanyebhya, if they simply hear from the people who do know the absolute truth intimately, J.P. Chati Tarant Yeva Mrityum, they also can become liberated.
Ati Taranti Mrityum,
they transcend the bonds of birth and death. And that is actually only possible by pure devotion to the Supreme Lord.
It's not a necessary qualification for the perfection of life in the form of realizing yourself as a pure devotee of Krishna. It is not necessary to become learned, to know so many books, and to have so much knowledge. Knowledge is a material asset. It is normally used in this world, just like other material assets, to control and enjoy. We like to control and enjoy matter, but more than that, we like to control and enjoy other living entities. We just use the matter for control. I live opulently to show off, to impress my neighbors, and so on. I use my knowledge to control other people. That's not what people use knowledge for, generally. To get control over their own life, having gone to the university and acquired a good education, I can get a good employment, a job. And I can earn money and live the way I want to live. That's using money for power. Or rather, I'm using knowledge for gaining power over your own life and power or control over other people. That's using knowledge as a material asset. But that kind of use of knowledge, even knowledge derived from the scriptures, even knowledge derived from the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you're using it as a material asset just to gain power over influence over other people, it's a little hard to conceive how you're going to get military or administrative power over other people by knowing the Bhagavatam, but certainly you can get influence, brahminical influence over other people. People will honor you as a teacher, as an acharya, as an authority, if you know the Bhagavatam. But to exploit your knowledge for that kind of material influence is a misuse. Knowledge of the Bhagavatam should not be used for monetary gain. It shouldn't be used as a means of making a living. That is offensive, teaching of the Bhagavatam, if you do it for money. Preaching of the Bhagavatam should not be done for money, and it should not be done for gaining a material position, for getting influence over other people. that may be accomplished. People may give you money because you're speaking the Bhagavatam. And you may want to refuse it, but you may accept it as charity. That's also a duty of a brahmana, pratigraha, to accept charity. Especially if you're giving something valuable, you're allowed to take something in exchange. That's a loving exchange among devotees. You're giving them knowledge, and they have some money, they give you some money. That's acceptable. You can accept money, and if Krishna arranges, you can accept a position, you can accept the power and the ability to influence other people. Krishna may give that to you. But that should not be your motive. That should not be what you're aiming for. You can accept these for your service, but your service should be to serve. If you want to be a pure Brahmana, Vaishnava, it should be to serve the message of the Bhagavatam selflessly. And if any byproducts, any circumstantial benefits come, then you may accept them for your service. Bhishma Dev, he lived selflessly. You can't say he was a selfish person. If anything, his fault was he was a little too much selfless in a sentimental way. He sacrificed his own future to satisfy a whim of his father. That is something. That is actually a tragic fault in Bhishma Dev, that he was sentimentally attached to serving his father at all costs. Actually, it wasn't right. It wasn't necessary for his father to get married again to this particular woman. He could have found some proper princess to marry if he needed to get married again. Why did he have to marry the daughter of a fisherman, King Shantanu? But his son supported him at all costs, and he sacrificed his own future. And he sacrificed the future of the Kuru dynasty out of sentimental attachment to his, what he thought was his duty to his father. And because of that, the whole tragedy of the Mahabharata, if you want to look at it as a dramatic tragedy, it's Krishna's Leela, actually, but you can look at it from a point of view that it's a tragic situation. The dynasty was destroyed. The world was, subjected to cataclysmic, disaster of the Kurukshetra War, and the persecution of the Pandavas, and they're having to struggle a good part of their life to get what was rightfully theirs. Yudhishthira should have been on the throne at a young age, and he should have ruled for 100 years, but he only ruled for 30-something years because he struggled a good part of his life to get that throne. And you can say the reason why it all happened is that Bhishma Dev was selfless in the wrong way. He sacrificed his career, his future. He took a vow that he would never accept the throne, that he would never get married. And in that way, he destroyed the dynasty. Because if Bhishma Dev had been able to assume the power, then Duryodhana never would have. And if Bhishma hadn't had that vow, he could have stood up to Duryodhana later on. He could have crushed Duryodhana. He could have stopped him. But he couldn't assume the power to do that without accepting the throne. So therefore, he never did. He just let Duryodhana do everything, all the nonsense he wanted to. He was powerless because of his vow. So we want to serve selflessly, but we must be sure that we're serving the essential purpose and not some sentimental attachment. It's also an attachment. He was attached to his concept of dharma, his duty to his father. We may have a concept of our duty as brahmanas, that we have to learn the books, we have to be scholars. That's okay if that's our designated service. And our spiritual master, under the inspiration of Srila Prabhupada, has assigned us to that service. Okay. But But we should not be sentimentally attached to it. That's not our prime business, to be scholars. Our prime business is to be devotees serving the mission of Srila Prabhupada in one capacity or another. And selflessness for us is not to be perfectly situated in the satraguna as scholarly brahmanas. That may be part of our service to aim in that direction. But it's not to make that the whole center of your life, the whole focus of your life, to be a scholarly brahman. Is for us, as servants of Srila Prabhupada, that's a misunderstanding of our actual duty. And it can cause trouble. Prabhupada was not an anti-intellectual. It's not that he, you know, hated scholarship. He appreciated, he's, as a transcendental personality, when he encountered a real Vaishnava scholar, he understood who he was dealing with and dealt properly and had proper respect for such learning. But he, seeing us, especially in the beginning of the movement, in, you know, with our conditioning and our misunderstanding of basic, you know, principles of how to live as a human being, he discouraged us from prematurely going through the external motions of being scholars. Scholars of Sanskrit, scholars of so many scriptures. Prabhupada very often discouraged his disciples. Not because he was anti-intellectual, against scholarship, but because we were misapplying the ideas. Anyway, this is the situation with Bhishma Dev, that he has his responsibility now to enlighten Yudhishthira. And this will be his great pleasure before leaving his body, to impart his vast knowledge of Dharma, of Varnashram Dharma, to share it with Yudhishthira, who is now going to be the king and be able to apply it in his rulership. It's one thing to have the theoretical knowledge, it's another thing to apply it. Just like Plato, the disciple of Socrates, he had his theories about how to rule a country, about how to organize a society. He wrote his Republic, Respublica. I don't know what it's called in Greek. He didn't write it. He spoke in his lectures and his disciples wrote it down. But he had a lot of ideas about how to organize society. Some of them were right according to the Vedic point of view, and some of them were not quite right. He thought... One thing he thought was that nobody should study dialectic, which means, you know, high philosophy. You know, those who are from the communist countries know about what dialectic is supposed to be. Nobody should study a dialectic philosophy until he's at least 30 years old. That the mind is not mature enough for that before then. So similarly, you know, we see that applied principle that yes, you know, we could teach 8-year-olds some grammar, but they're not really ready to study Vedanta philosophy. You have to be older than that. So he was right on that. But he also said that in the ideal state that he'd like to organize, music should be discouraged. The music just makes the heart weak and sentimental, and that, so that the citizens of the state, of his state, should not study music. So he wasn't right on that. Anyway, but he had his theories, and he had the longest of all his dialogues, Plato's dialogues, is the Republic. He has so many ideas about organizing society. Sort of a perverted reflection of the principles of Varnashram Dharma. Dharma, it's a kind of Mlecha version of the Dharma Shastra. All speculation, but some of it is correct. But he wanted to see it applied. He wanted to see someone actually following his principles and putting them into action. So he had an opportunity to go to Syracuse, which is on an island of Sicily, southern Italy. He's a Greek living in Athens, so he crossed the Mediterranean Ocean on an invitation to become the tutor of the prince, the heir apparent of the tyrant of Syracuse and Sicily. And he trained up this young prince, hoping that he would actually apply the theoretical principles of his social philosophy. It didn't actually happen. He went there. The boy probably didn't assimilate everything completely, and therefore he didn't really do anything to apply it when he became the king. But that was the idea. Put it into action. So here's Bhishma Dev's chance. Yeah. And he was successful. By Krishna's arrangement, Yudhishthira came to him to get, at the last minute, in the last hours of Bhishma Dev, minutes of Bhishma Dev's life, hours. It's actually days. It took days to give these instructions. Probably weeks. To give all the detailed instructions that Bhishma Dev had to give on Varnashram principle, and to give them to somebody who would apply them. Social theory is meant to be put into practice. It's not just, you know, pure mathematics, just an exercise of the mind. It's meant to be for actually organizing human society, social theory, including the Varnashram principles. It's meant to be done, not just to be thought about. So here's someone, Yudhishthira, a student, who could actually put it into practice because he's on the point of assuming the throne of the most powerful kingdom in the world. If he had already been king for 50 years, then it would be hard to change the way things were already set up. But now he's a new king with a new start. He could reorganize everything properly according to Varnashram principles. Perfect opportunity for Bhishma Dev to give his final instructions to the right student who could actually do something with his knowledge. That's Bhishma Dev's situation. It's not... The tragedy's over, the battle's done, he's about to leave his body, but now the final triumph of his life, to give these instructions to Yudhishthira, and then to leave his body in the presence of Krishna. So, notice that he didn't greet Krishna first. Krishna he knows familiarly. He's elder family member of Krishna, so he doesn't have to give immediate attention to Krishna. He first of all gives his attention and his respects to the sages who are visiting. Even that was the court etiquette. If a sage was present, if a sage was visiting, Narada or any other sage, he gets the first respect, even if Krishna is present. So first the sages were honored with greetings by Bhishma Dev, and then Krishna, and then he turned his attention to Yudhishthira and his brothers. That's the sequence. Bhishma Dev, Desha Kala, what is it? Desha Kala Vibhagavit. He knows perfectly how to act according to the circumstances of time and place, and patra, persons who are present, how to deal properly at the right time, in the right situation with the particular people you're present with. Hare Krishna. Okay, so any questions or comments? Yes, Sarvagirma?
There's two questions. They're related to one another. First one is, if Bhishma Deva, he himself failed to properly apply his sincerity, his selfless in his situation, is there any fault in his instructions to Yudhishthira, or he's necessarily matured the course of time?
Well, Bhishma Deva didn't fail the principles of Varnashram Dharma. If anything, he was too adherent to them. You know, duty to your father. He took that too seriously. Although he should have understood that his duty to the state was more important. Yes, so he made one mistake of judgment in his life.
That doesn't contradict his being an authority. Even an acharya can make a mistake. Only God doesn't make any mistakes.
So it was not fault, and there was not fault in his instructions to his hero.
No, it didn't spoil the instructions.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And also, second question.
They're considered ideal instructions, even though there already are so many Dharma Shastras. But Bhishma Dev explained it so explicitly, so graphically, with so many examples, that you'd have to be a complete idiot not to be able to understand the way that Bhishma Dev explains Varnashram Dharma.
The second question is how to apply our selflessness in our life. For example, there may be so many difficult situations, and we might think that this is our way to apply it, but it might be wrong. So how to be in
that? Well, it's not our duty to suffer. That's not our duty. To undergo terrible austerities and suffer the, what is it? I don't know. I think it's just a phrase from Shakespeare. All the torments and the agitations of material life. That's not being selfless in itself. Sometimes we have to suffer, but it's not that we should look for suffering or cultivate, or develop the cult of suffering, and think that that's the purpose of our life. We should be dedicated to Prabhupada's mission in our own appointed capacity and be selfless in that. Selfless doesn't mean miserable. It means putting aside inferior motives and focusing on the essential motives, essential purposes of life. That's selflessness. We help others not by mundane charity, not by denying ourselves, but by using everything we have to push on this Krishna consciousness movement. To give everything for Prabhupada's service. That's selflessness. But we have to have something to give. If we're a wreck, if we're, our life is a disaster and we can't even function, then we can't give much to Prabhupada. We should be in fit condition to give something. So it doesn't mean we deny ourselves. We should take care of ourselves so we can have something to give to Prabhupada.
And does it mean that practical application must be coming from above, like from instruction of spiritual master or superior authorities?
Well, generally it is, but we may be put in a position where we're expected to use our own judgment and intelligence. Spiritual master may tell the disciple, okay, you figure out what to do. Or that may be the situation, that Krishna has put him in a situation. The spiritual master is not present, or he tells the disciple, you use your intelligence. Then following means to decide for yourself, because that's your duty in that case. Like Arjuna in the 7th chapter. Krishna told him what to do, and then Arjuna refused, and that's what Krishna wanted. Krishna wanted Arjuna to use his own intelligence.
Still, we might make some wrong choice, so maybe it's, maybe it's proper to ask some devotee around us whether it's the right way to do or not.
Yeah, take counsel, take advice, yeah. If you're not sure about what you're doing, take advice, yes. It's Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So we have three supports to take guidance from. Guru and the Shastra and the Sadhus, the other devotees. Okay. Shri Sanatan Prabhu. Oh, this is the other side. Yeah.
Thank you for your class.
Thank you.
How to avoid this sentimental attachment to scholarship? How to find the proper balance?
To be fanatically attached to Prabhupada's mission. If you're just all the time thinking, how can I do something to help Prabhupada, to satisfy him, then you're not going to get distracted. If you're very intent on doing the right thing, then you won't you won't let yourself do the wrong thing. So we have to have a, we have to be, you know, very dedicated to the mission of our spiritual masters. Then we won't get deviated into, you know, into unessential absorptions, like inappropriate, you know, involvement in studying. Well, everything we'll do will be appropriate if our focus is in the right direction, if our, you know, if we're intent on doing, you know, what's actually essential. Then all the secondary things will fall into place if we have the right basic focus.
Is this okay to think that my studying is my service and it will bring fruits in future?
Yes, unless the situation changes and it's not your service anymore. Yeah, if it's your service, yes. Then whatever my service is, I should pursue that. But Krishna can change his mind and decide, oh, you know, why don't you do something else? Or the spiritual master may say, do something else. In that case, you have to change. You can't be stubbornly attached to your idea of what you think your duty is. We have to be flexible. The duty may change. Okay, we should, you know, we should try to be successful in this program. But if you're not, you know, if you can't do it, or, you know, you're not happy with it, then it's not the end of the world.
Could we make a similar analysis as you did with Bhishmadev, that he was too much selfless, actually, with Ramayana, that King Dasharath was too much attached to keep his vow,
yes,
to his wife, and then further that Ramachandra was too much attached to fulfill his father's words.
Okay, but now you're criticizing God.
No,
he's God. He can do what he wants.
Well, yeah, but faultless. I mean, just analytically.
Well, he's faultless. Obviously, God is faultless.
Yeah, but...
But also the pure devotees who are participating in the leelas of God. You know, the tragedy of the Ramayana is not an ordinary tragedy. It's Lord Vishnu's leela. It's all pleasure, actually. It looks like a tragedy. It really looks like a tragedy. Yeah. And, you know... Even Prabhupada commented like that. He was asked by one lady reporter in Hyderabad when I was there some question about why is Lord Ramachandra suffering in the forest? And he answered, this proves that the association of women is always a cause of suffering, even if you are God. Yeah. Okay, it looks like a tragedy, but actually it isn't. Deep under the surface, it's the ecstatic leela of Lord Ramachandra. And Dasharatha's assisting that leela by exhibiting his apparent fault, but he's a pure devotee, so there's no fault at all. You cannot even begin to ascribe fault in God himself, but his pure devotees also, their faults are also apparent only.
So I mean,
and Bhishma's fault also, he's also a pure devotee.
It's also like that, similar, and we also cannot really say that Bhishma made a fault. I mean,
yeah, he didn't really. It's because he did it. If you know, it wouldn't be any Mahabharata,
yeah,
the Pandavas would have gotten the kingdom with no fight, and then it wouldn't have been interesting. It wouldn't have been no drama. There'd been no drama there. They wouldn't have been glorified by fighting for their rights. So it all had to happen. It was part of the arrangement for Krishna's leela.
Yeah, but it's valid from one analytical point of view.
It sets an example. We shouldn't be sentimental. You know, the pure devotees intentionally act faultily to show an example what not to do to the common people. They make themselves a bad example intentionally to show others what not to do. Okay. Yes.
Can Can we say that as pure devotees, they're enacting a role, that they know, they're even aware of this fault in Madhavdugi, but they're just enacting
on some level. On some level, but they're human beings, living entities, jivas. And jivas do have faults. It's not like they were only, you know, like an actor just going through the motions of playing a role. They actually were feeling the role. They were living the role. When you're in Krishna's lila, it's not just play acting. It's for real. The feelings are for real. They're more for real than the feelings of our so-called regular life.
Yeah, but like we said, so with Arjuna, that
the attachment, the sentiment, the pain of losing somebody, these are felt as very real. They're not just play acting.
In the sense that they are covered by Krishna's yoga maya, so yes. Then they can actually take part in the lila, but maybe
yoga maya makes them forget the real facts and think things are otherwise than they actually are.
Yeah, in that sense, in acting.
Maybe. But.
Because maybe without that covering, they would act differently.
But it's a different kind of maya.
Yeah.
They're an illusion, you can say, but that illusion is more real than our so-called reality. The illusion of being in yoga maya. Yes, Navadar, go
on. It seemed he was glorified for this act.
Yeah. The demigods all, you know, praised him.
Or they praise him for just the fact of staying celibate, or...
Yes. And it is, of course, it's praiseworthy.
Yeah. Okay. At the same time, it was a fault.
On a very, you know, on a transcendental level, it caused trouble. But it was supposed to anyway. Yeah, it was supposed to happen. Yes.
We can take this lesson, as you said.
One could say that Bhishma Dev, he didn't knowingly do it because it was quite unusual that Vichitravirya and the other son, they both died. Those two other people who were supposed to be the continuing dynasty, they both happened to die.
He wasn't supposed to. He wasn't the heir apparent.
Yeah,
that means the one who you expect to become the next king. He wasn't. It wasn't him.
Well, yeah, that's one thing, but he also kind of figured that there was two other people that could continue the dynasty, so he thought there's no harm becoming celibate.
Oh, I see, because of two...
There's like Vichitravirya, and who was the other one?
Chitrangada,
yeah. But then they both happened to die, and then it all fell on his shoulders, and he was celibate, so that it was kind of like unexpected for him, he didn't foresee it.
Yeah. He thought he had it figured out, but... Okay. Yes,
sir. Also, in the Draupadi was affected by Bhishma Dev did not object. Later on, when he was instructing, Draupadi asked, "What happened to your intelligence that time?"
Yeah.
Then he admitted that he was contaminated by Duryodhana's association or something like that.
He says that, Mahabharata?
I mean, hearing.
Okay. Some say that Bhishma Dev was, he was degraded. Some even say that he, on the battlefield of Kshetra, was haunted by a, demoniac spirit, and he started acting like a demon during the fight. Some say that, but that I think is just the appearance. The reality is that he's not a person who can be degraded like that. It just seems like that. And he may say that about himself, but that's not... I would say it's not the fact that he could be degraded so easily. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.